What's up, Shitpost listeners? This is Jared Holt, your host. It's September 1st, 2021, and this is an episode about ivermectin. Across the country, people are seeking out ivermectin, which is a drug typically used to treat parasitic worms, because they believe it may help them fight COVID-19. Ivermectin has failed repeated clinical trials as a treatment for coronavirus. Should also note that many of the people seeking ivermectin are unvaccinated. You may have seen, read, heard a lot about ivermectin lately, but it didn't come out of nowhere. On this episode, we'll be talking to Vera Bergengruen, who's a Washington correspondent at Time magazine, who's going to trace us back a little bit of the history of ivermectin. But as it sits, the demand for this drug is incredibly high. Researchers at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, according to the New York Times, saw more than 88,000 prescriptions per week in mid-August, compared to about 3,600 prescriptions that you would normally get before the pandemic began. The demand for ivermectin is causing shortages, and some people have been so desperate to get their hands on this, believing that it is some kind of miracle cure for COVID, that they're going to, you know, tractor supply stores and that sort of thing, and buying up drugs that are typically meant to treat livestock as a dewormer that contain ivermectin as an active ingredient. Because of this, because they're taking, quantities meant for horses and cows and sheep, there have also been a lot of calls into poison control centers reporting people overdosing themselves with ivermectin. It can be pretty funny to think about people eating horse paste just because they refuse to get vaccinated, but it's actually a pretty grim situation, and that's why we're going to talk about it today. After the break, I'll come back and we'll be speaking with Vera Bergengruen. But before then, I do need to plug the Substack. If you like the show, you can go to shitpost.substack.com and support the show with a subscription. With your subscription, you get access to a newsletter that goes out between episodes. So when there's an episode 1 week, you get a newsletter the next week, and so on. And if for whatever reason you can't afford a subscription, but you'd still like to see those newsletters, just get in touch with me somehow, and we will figure it out. I'll catch you after the break.
We'll sing a victory tune, and we'll all meet back at the local saloon.
And we'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, saying, whiskey for my men, beer for my horses, whiskey for my men.
Joining Shitpost now, we have Vera Bergengruen. I'm so sorry for butchering your name, Vera.
You did great.
It's a good, honest try is what we aim for on this show. Anyway, Vera is the Washington correspondent at Time magazine, wrote a really excellent piece that came out last week about ivermectin, which it seems like is really eating up a lot of space in the zeitgeist right now. First off, Vera, hello. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. Big fan.
Oh, well, thanks. I guess first off, ivermectin, people keep talking about horse paste. What is ivermectin? And more importantly, why are people going to Tractor Supply Company and then putting it in their body?
Oh, man, where to start with that? All right. You know, ivermectin, just to lay out the basics, it's an antiparasitic drug that is usually used to deworm horses or livestock or dogs. And in some cases, it's used to treat things like river blindness or intestinal infections in humans. And it's not a new drug at all. People seem to think it just popped up, but it's been used, you know, for 40 years for these things. But during the pandemic, it kind of became popular in some parts of Latin America and Asia because people thought there were indications that it could be used to prevent or treat COVID. And, you know, there was a lot of kind of haphazardly done and inconclusive studies, nothing definitely scientifically sound. But it's something that kind of had been brewing there for a while, not as much in the U.S., But here it kind of arrived more than anything last winter. In December, there was a Republican-led panel in Congress on alternative treatments, and they invited a doctor who was praising it as this, you know, quote-unquote wonder drug.
Mountains of data have emerged from many centers and countries around the world showing the miraculous effectiveness of ivermectin. It basically obliterates transmission of this virus. If you take it, you will not get sick.
You know, I think people were kind of over hydroxychloroquine maybe at that point, but it kind of took off in a kind of underground way. People kind of like to think that there's this wonder cure that's been popular in some other country, and in here it's just been suppressed. But, you know, it's only in the last couple of weeks when we've really seen this take off. I mean, there's, you know, feed stores and others I've called kind of telling me they have to lock it away because, you know, people who clearly don't belong and, if, you know, people who clearly don't own livestock are showing up and buying up all of their supply and things like that. And for my reporting, I mean, this is a bit speculative, but it seems very tied to the surge of the Delta variant, which, you know, is just resulting in these massive numbers of mainly unvaccinated people ending up in hospitals. So a lot of people who were previously of the whole kind of online disinformation wing that were COVID skeptics at the beginning, they obviously are kind of scared of it now. They are very much against the vaccine. You know, this is what they're kind of using as an alternative. So that's, you know, that's why we've seen this really take off in recent weeks.
For somebody to go and seek out ivermectin from their local tractor supply store, which is, you know, they're doing this because pharmacies in many cases either don't want to fill it or, you know, this isn't a very common drug for people to take, so they just don't have large amounts of it, certainly not to meet the demand of Facebook cranks everywhere who realize the pandemic is serious and that because they're unvaccinated, the crosshairs are on their chest.
Right.
But, you know, just can't bring themselves to go get a vaccine. And, you know, you mentioned hydroxychloroquine, which was kind of what ivermectin is now, like that's what it was last year. It's always mm-hmm. It's kind of baffling to me how much this year is just like kind of going through the same motions as last year.
Like
almost right on schedule. But you know, hydroxychloroquine was the same way. You know, it was this wonder drug, this thing that wasn't the orthodox way of protecting yourself from this disease, but you know, the life hack, if you will. This is what NATO and the globalists like don't want you to take because
it's
too good. That's the problem. No, but you know, you made that observation, but you know, does the ivermectin craze feel any different to you? Like as somebody who has watched and reported out on this space for a while, I guess, how does it compare in your mind?
So it's definitely true. It feels like we're just kind of going through the same cycle in some senses over and over again. You know, hydroxychloroquine was this medication used for malaria and also was something that was being used, it seemed, in other countries. And people in the U.S., you know, in certain spaces seem to kind of glob onto that saying, oh, you know, this is being used to great success in, you know, country TK. And, you know, our pharmaceutical companies and our government doesn't want us to know about it because they want to control us. Sounds extreme, but it's actually a very common, you know, it really melds well with the general distrust of public health authorities and the U.S. government, which is pretty widespread among a whole sector of the American population. But the similarity, I think, is that it was used by right-wing figures. It was pushed by them, again, as a way to kind of have a contrarian view and kind of sow distrust of public health and science and all of that. And this is kind of my speculation, but, you know, it did seem to fall out of favor, partly because Trump, who was its biggest promoter, I mean, he constantly was talking about it from the White House. He had people over to talk about it. But he didn't even take it when he got sick. Right. And I think that seemed to, a lot of people kind of seemed very thrown off by that. And then, you know, you had a lot of right-wing doctors who were saying, you know, the whole pandemic would just end in 30 days if everyone could have access to this drug. But there's only so long you can say things like that before people kind of start to doubt it. So a lot of pharmacists I actually spoke with said they were joking among themselves, calling ivermectin the second coming of hydroxychloroquine. But the biggest difference, and it's a really, really deadly difference, really, is that now there's vaccines. And, you know, somebody taking some level of hydroxychloroquine, you know, to prevent COVID last year is not the same as people living their lives completely normally and in an era where a lot of things have opened up because they think that it's an alternative to the vaccine, right?
Right.
So a lot of doctors are telling me, you know, the general attitude, and I spend, you know, way too much of my sanity in a lot of these groups, online groups, but like, you know, the more time you spend on them, that is 100% their worldview. It's the vaccine is poison. I'm not going to take it. I would rather be fired than take it. But, you know, COVID is real. COVID is deadly. I see people around me who are ending up in the hospital and I need some way to protect myself. But if I take this, you know, it's basically, you know, I don't need the vaccine because if I get sick, I can take this or use it to prevent it. And so that's a really big difference with hydroxychloroquine because that's this, you know, obviously, to be clear, that is false. I mean, doctors, the FDA, everyone says that is not true. There have been no studies that show that this is in any way useful to even treat COVID, but definitely isn't the same as a vaccine. And so this is why that's partly so dangerous. People using it as an alternative. And then because the fear is so much stronger, I think, during this particular surge, which is mainly targeting, that's definitely the wrong word, mainly hitting vaccinated people, you know, that is why I think people are also overdoing it. They're overdosing, they're giving to kids, and it's, you know, it's really scary, and it's kind of unclear how you combat that at all.
Going back to something you said a couple minutes ago about this, like, distrust for public health, because I think that is kind of like fundamentally what's going on here. It's also like distrust for public health also isn't really a partisan thing. My soapbox for years has been like disinformation isn't partisan, but like the difference is you have people like Louis Gohmert talking about ivermectin at like public events, and you don't have Nancy Pelosi like hawking InfoWars supplements. You know, it's like there's a different level of institutional buy-in happening. What's going on there? Because it, although like the horse paste thing is definitely like getting spread by right-wing media and getting hyped up by conservative places online, I would imagine it's not like a lot of people don't, I guess, probably think that they're doing this as like a political statement. Is that fair to say?
I think that's fair to say. I mean, it does feel like for many, you know, their media environment and their online environment and all those fears, I mean, are particularly picked to only be right wing or to only like allow certain information, which is a political statement. But at the same time, that's definitely true, I think. And also, I mean, the ivermectin thing, I mean, when I'm researching this, lots of videos slip in there of, you know, like California yoga teachers and like, you know, kind of holistic nutritionists or something who are definitely not in this, you know, who are definitely of a different political category. And, you know, the Venn diagram kind of meets in the middle when it comes to anti-vaccine propaganda. It's not just, you know, the right-wing sphere, but it does feel like for if we're talking about right-wing spaces or like for the people who seem to be supporting these particular kind of fuck medical cures from right-wing groups, I mean, this is kind of like a value statement for them. You know, it's a statement that they distrust the U.S. government, that they distrust all these authorities, that that they know better, you know, the kind of like do your own research crowd. And that's, again, not to keep coming back to distrust, but I mean, it kind of feeds into like, I agree with you. I mean, I think it's a lot of this, the most effective disinformation is based on levels of truth sometimes, right? I mean,
right.
This is
right.
a very real distrust of pharmaceutical companies. You know, when have they ever done anything wrong, right? Or like the health system.
Absolutely predatory industry.
Right. Like, and all of those.
Like, I get it. I get why people might not like it.
Right. And so, I mean, their thing is, you know, they're trying to push vaccines on us because they want to make money off them and they want to, you know, and then it's a very thin line to just kind of crossing over into, it's a conspiracy to silence those who want to, you know, kind of stop this poison. There's many, many levels to this, but like, you know, a lot of it is, again, based in a pretty non-political distrust that is well-founded, but then it's obviously taken advantage of by politically inclined groups. And that's kind of what's happening here because it combines so well with the entire theme of the last year and even this year that is just so distrustful of any authority figures of science. And so it almost doesn't matter. I mean, it's one, just a little extra point on there. You know, a lot of what these people were saying for a long time was, well, the vaccines aren't FDA approved, you know, and that's something that we're using as an excuse for the longest time. But, you know, the FDA did approve the Pfizer vaccine. And now they're saying that, you know, everyone's basically saying, well, why would we trust the FDA? So it's just kind of in this, there's this, you know, it exists in this chaotic sphere where there is no ultimate kind of authority that they trust, except for the groups who tell them what they want to hear, which is why these kind of quack medicine cures are so popular. They're 100% just telling people what they want to hear.
You know, you mentioned the how this kind of distrust is being weaponized and leveraged by conservative political figures and groups. I want to get now into the, you know, meat and potatoes of the article that you published at Time, which was really excellent, looking at America's frontline doctors, which people may remember. There was a video of like a handful of people in lab coats talking in front of the Supreme Court. It was like a, I don't know anybody who went to that, but Trump ended up retweeting a video of it, and it went viral and was all over the place. That was America's frontline doctors. And it turns out, you know, you found in your reporting that they've actually had a pretty significant role in popularizing ivermectin, or like trying to connect people with it ostensibly. So, Vera, America's frontline doctors, what do we need to know?
Yeah, so like you mentioned, they kind of came on the scene when they kind of seemed to appear out of nowhere as a group of doctors who were completely echoing the Trump White House's talking points about COVID. They were saying, you know, basically it's being overblown, the economy needs to reopen, you know, hydroxychloroquine works, all these different things. And it's made up of a pretty bizarre cast of characters. You know, they call themselves a nonpartisan kind of group of medical professionals, but it was straight up founded as a right-wing political organization by groups like the Tea Party Patriots and other Republican groups, specifically to, you know, push the Trump administration's reopening narrative. And then in terms of the medical part of that, very few of them, to almost none of them, actually treated COVID patients at all or were in any way. I mean, the front line is a huge misnomer, and it's they named themselves that on purpose, right? But, you know, it's, right. It's you know, founded by a Los Angeles physician. And, you know, out of the group on the Supreme Court steps that day, you know, two of them were like ophthalmologists and only one of them was even licensed. And then there was, you know, a kind of a religious doctor who became famous because they call her this, you know, demon sperm lady, because she has a lot of really crazy claims over how certain illnesses, you know, come from having sex with demons.
It's a spiritual transaction. So when you're doing it by yourself, demons come and join you. When you're doing it in the right way in marriage, God watches over it.
And then, you know, that kind of stole a lot of the spotlight, but the group actually just continued on, because even though none of them are infectious disease specialists or, you know, or worked in ICUs or emergency rooms during the pandemic, their name sounds trustworthy. They're wearing white coats and they're, again, telling people what they want to hear. So that wasn't exactly disqualifying once people dug more deeply into this group. And they just kind of have benefited from pivoting to whatever the most popular right-wing COVID conspiracy of the moment is. So it started with, you know, emergency rooms are empty, parking lots are empty. We're, you know, this is being exaggerated, you know, wake up sheeple kind of stuff. Yeah, yeah. And then it switched to hydroxychloroquine will save us. Then it switched to ivermectin. And at the same time that they've, you know, kind of switched to ivermectin and selling ivermectin, which is another point, they've also kind of started this entire legal team, which they say will help people sue their employers if they require vaccination. They're basically creating this fantasy parallel universe for every single COVID conspiracy where they are the solution. And obviously one of the things they can get out of that is monetize it. But also they've built a pretty massive following. I mean, their website just keeps getting more and more, you know, a bigger audience. Their Telegram groups are, you know, hundreds of thousands of people. Their Facebook groups as well. And they've got this loyal email list that they can, you know, email whenever they kind of want donations. And it does seem to be working. Just, you know, one data point for that is that the founder of the group was actually arrested for participating in the January 6th insurrection. And because she was there, and she raised almost $500,000 for her legal defense just by, you know, doing the typical kind of like, they're not going after me, they're going after you,
right.
kind of thing. So, so they've kind of managed to, you know, it's been like a year and change since they appeared on the scene, and they've only really grown in influence by again, kind of peddling whatever COVID conspiracy is popular at the moment, which now happens to be ivermectin.
Yeah, after I read your story, I went and I kicked around on the America's Frontline Doctor website, and it is like shockingly slick. Like all I can think about as I click around with it or like open up a little portal is just like, I just have a little voice in my head saying over and over again, like, well, that's not cheap. That's not cheap. It's like,
Especially compared to most of these, right? Like they usually, they're like ramshackle things set up on like Squarespace. This is definitely, you know, just to add to that, this was actually set up by the Tea Party Patriots. The original domain was bought by this right-wing political group. So, I mean, the money's coming from somewhere, right?
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of resources. If they're doing this legal center thing, like, God knows lawyers aren't cheap either. It's like, serious money behind this. And in your reporting, you noted that America's Frontline Doctors is connected to Council for National Policy. For people who aren't familiar, very quickly, what's Council for National Policy?
So it's a pretty secretive kind of group of right-wing kind of very conservative activists, and different groups are part of it, like the Tea Party Patriots and others. A lot of reporters have dug into it, but it's kind of behind a lot of kind of what they call dark money pushes, where they kind of seem to set things up, and it's usually coming from there. And the only reason we have visibility into this group's role with America's Frontline Doctors is because there actually was a leaked call back in May of last year where they're discussing how Trump is being hammered because he keeps contradicting doctors and no doctors are backing him up, which is literally why they created this group. They straight up, you know, created this group, had a bunch of them sign a letter supporting the Trump administration's talking points and then set up that Supreme Court conference. It was fully a creation of this of the Council for National Policy, and kind of ironically now, it's kind of taken a life of its own. It definitely has kind of it doesn't seem to be as controlled by a lot of these things anymore. All of its followers, it's kind of funny when you look at the Telegram groups, like they absolutely despise Trump because he's pushing the vaccine, and so it's kind of gone off its own way. But I mean, they basically, this was fully created as a political project, and yet hundreds of thousands of people think it's a legitimate medical organization because of the way they sound.
Yeah, I usually describe Council for National Policy with some variation of the following. That everything Glenn Beck tells you about like George Soros and the left is like what Council for National Policy actually does. Like,
that's pretty accurate.
This weird, shady little place where money and campaigns spawn. And who knows who's pulling the strings? But we're not going to go there on this podcast.
That's for another time.
Yeah, that's from the podcast I do under my burner name, Alex Jones. No, but I want to zoom out a bit here and kind of talk about the nature of ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, and like it's all kind of part of the same scam. And when I say scam, I don't mean that like the people who are seeking this or are, you know, distrustful in public health for whatever reasons, or might be politically motivated to not get a vaccine. You know, nobody likes to think that they get scammed, but it seems like the people kind of leading this push are being pretty scammy. I mean, that's fair to say, right? People are making a ton of money selling like quack medicine. Everybody's become, you know, the like bodybuilders who hawk like magic weight loss pills and stuff.
Right.
I guess I'm just curious if you have any thoughts about that and sort of like what the kind of scammy component might say about the whole project.
Right. So one of the things I kind of ran into here was that, you know, as far as scams go, this is people who are hawking, promoting or selling things like ivermectin, I mean, it's pretty transparent and it's not as much malicious or even, it's not even like a competent way to make money because it's kind of like badly set up for many of these people. So part of it is They're trying to make money off it. In the case of America's Frontline Doctors, they partnered with a telemedicine service where, you know, I haven't been able to prove this, but it seems pretty clear that they're getting some kind of cut from the thousands of referrals they send their way, which then kind of connects people with a physician willing to prescribe ivermectin and you know, to a pharmacy. But the system that is set up is just so kind of badly put together with these digital pharmacies. And, you know, when you actually trace them down, they're very, very sketchy. And like, you know, so that doesn't even quite work. So, you know, part of it is tons of people being scammed out of their money because the system is falling apart. It's not even like intentional, I think, all the time. It's just they're overwhelmed and they don't know how to stop charging people, basically. And partly because it is, there's just so many ways to make a quick buck off these people. And again, people will only believe exactly what you say. So even in terms of, you know, legal services, for example, just in the same category, you know, the same people who are buying ivermectin off these websites are probably all too happy to donate to a lawsuit to stop vaccinations in children or to, you know, again, these lawsuits are publicity stunts. They're not going to do anything.
Right.
America's Frontline Doctors lawyers are pushing this lawsuit that says that, you know, 45,000 people, 45,000 Americans died after getting the second shot of the vaccine in 3 days or something like that. And that's like a completely fantastical claim, completely untrue. But all you need to do is put it into a lawsuit for people to start citing it. It doesn't matter that, it, you know, I think the judge laughed it off as incomprehensible, but it exists now in a lawsuit, right? So like people cite it all the time. And so then the same group is taking money from people for writing them exemption letters, religious exemption letters, so they don't have to get vaccinated. So in terms of kind of the scamminess at play, again, it kind of goes to monetizing the fantasy that certain people want to hear. And they're really, the thing is, this group is really, even their critics admit, this group is just really, really good at what they do. They look kind of legit. A bunch of them are actual doctors, even though they are not, you know, qualified to really be opining on COVID. But they just, people trust them and they are able to kind of monetize whatever they want. They went on this national RV tour called The Uncensored Truth. And they just, you know, filled big spaces and signed, you know, Simone Gold, the founder of the group, signed her book, and they collected donations to fight the, you know, big government. And, you know, they basically, the entire ecosystem they've set up makes it easy to monetize whatever they want. And I think that is just obviously inherently scammy, but, you know, it's amazing. I mean, there's literally thousands of complaints on these sites when you go of people who never got their ivermectin, who never got a refund, who are out of money, who are really sick. And they still don't blame the group because that can't possibly be it. So they blame the CDC for not, you know, making it easy to get ivermectin, or, you know, it's this thing where the scammer is able to get away with it basically all the time in the eyes of their supporters. So I'm not sure that answers the question, but basically everything is inherently scammy about this.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And as we're coming up on time here, if we zoom out one more time, you know, besides the obvious of please don't take the horse paste, people.
Hey, it's apple flavored, I hear.
I'm sure it's delicious. If it's good enough for a horse, it's good enough for me. But I guess what should, you know, I'm making air quotes here, the rest of us, like, what should we take away from this? Like, as you were reporting this out, were there any kind of like personal thoughts or observations that you had that you'd be willing to share here?
I think one of the takeaways for me, and I mean, I'm obviously joking about it. We all participate in this, but I kind of find a lot of the, it's just so easy to laugh people off as crazy horse paste people. And that's not ever going to get us anywhere. I mean, that's not very useful. You know, the FDA itself, you know, tweeted, you know, you're not a horse. Stop taking this thing. It had a picture of a horse. And I mean, what's the audience for that? The audience for that is us, or like doctors, or, you know, people who already believe what the FDA has to say. Whereas like, it's obviously untrue, but like in these people's minds, it's something that is, you know, used in humans, and, you know, they're not trying to take the horse medication. They're just relying on it when they have to. And so I just kind of feel like a lot of what I've gotten a massive, you know, influx of DMs and messages to the story from people who had success, you know, kind of asking, you know, their family members who cite this group, for example, and others kind of, you know, has this doctor ever tweeted COVID? Like trying to discredit the people spreading the disinformation rather than the disinformation itself, because that tends to make it much easier to sow some doubt and to, you know, or to at least make it clear that these people are just as untrustworthy as the people, as the others that they distrust, if that makes sense. So I think a lot of the, I mean, just kind of laughing about horse paste. I mean, if you're actually trying to get through to someone, which I think a lot of the health communication offices in the US are trying to do, isn't going to work with these people. And so I think that's not exactly a takeaway, but that is one of the things that keeps kind of frustrating me. And maybe it's because like I spend an unholy amount of time in these people's heads, but I do think that that's never going to work. And so maybe one of the better ways to do it is to really look at, you know, should these people be licensed? And, you know, should the people who are using their credentials to spread this disinformation still be allowed to do so?
I completely agree. That's part of why I, you know, try to frame this stuff and the discussion as the scam that it is, right? Because like not wanting to get scammed, that's universal. So if it's like, hey, someone might be hawking you snake oil, or like, hey, why did these people, I mean, like, forget what they're saying, why do they keep asking you for money? Like a lot, like, you know, just getting into people's heads like that a little bit, maybe that could be effective. But, you know, this disinformation stuff is like so widespread and rampant at this point, you kind of just need to try a little bit of everything. But yeah, you know, it's very fun to laugh at people, quote unquote, eating the horse paste. I mean, it's funny to think about, right? Objectively, but it's
right.
You got to also bring maybe something else to the conversation too. I don't know, but,
It's hard not to. It's such an easy, I mean, it's just on its face, a crazy thing that's happening. But at the same time, if we were actually trying to get through, I completely agree. And that's actually something that's worked. I've seen lots of people in these groups raising questions or asking the group to answer to my article and others that have, you know, been covering this. Because, you know, it's a universal thing not to want to be scammed out of money. And if these people are capable of scamming you, maybe they're not the freedom fighters you thought they were. So that's maybe one way to do it.
I've been talking with Farah Bergen-Gruen. Did I do better that time?
Perfect.
Excellent. At least I got it by the end. Okay. She's a Washington correspondent for Time magazine. Farah, because this is Shitpost, you're going to get the question every guest gets. What's your favorite thing on the internet right now?
Oh boy. My favorite thing on the internet. All right. So for someone who covers the online spheres, I'm actually very late to TikTok. But one of the things I've been, it's been partly for the reporting of the story, but one of the things I've been kind of going down, and you can imagine, having heard a bit of my work, how confused my algorithm is by the things I search on TikTok.
Yeah. My YouTube one is just completely shot. Imagine. Yeah.
Yeah, like some white nationalism sprinkled in with like cooking videos or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the things I have to look up for work are bizarre, right? And so the TikTok algorithm picked up on this. But one of the side effects has been watching this like vaccine culture war play out among the teens. And let me tell you, Jared, like that is wild. Like the teens, like, you know, it is, there's this whole new category of videos where conservative teenagers are posting things like, you know, when he tells you he's a Republican and unvaccinated, and it's like a woman, you know, or another one, you know, it's a guy saying when she tells you she's getting the vaccine, and then that song, You'll Never See Me Again, playing. And then other teens kind of responding to those saying, yeah, you won't, she won't see you because you'll be dead. And it's this weird kind of like, you know, this political debate that's happening, this whole culture war playing out among teenagers. Really, it's so dark, and it just kind of perfectly encapsulates what's happening on the bigger scale. And I've just been weirdly, morbidly obsessed with watching this. So that's a rather shameful rabbit hole I've been going down.
Yeah, that sounds wild, because it's like young people who, in between like studying for school and stuff, I guess, are basically just like making memes at each other. And
exactly. Like, yeah. And spreading some good old disinformation as well.
Oh. Well, Farah, where can people keep up with you and all the great work you're doing?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at Vera M. Bergen, and I usually kind of share my reporting on observations over there. And yeah, I'm sure I'll be doing a lot more on this to come.
That was my interview with Vera Bergen-Gruen. She is an incredible reporter. Go read her story on ivermectin and America's Frontline Doctors, and follow her online. She's always reporting out really interesting stuff from the weirder parts of politics that we talk about on this show quite frequently. And that's all I've got this week. This has been Jared Holt, September 1st. I'll catch you in a couple weeks.